Our fifth case for argument is United States against Diaz-Guadarrama. Mr. Simon.
Good morning. May it please the court. This case is whether the totality of the circumstances involving my client, David Diaz-Guadarrama, demonstrate the fact that he's entitled to a reduction of his sentence for acceptance of responsibility. I think the two main reasons that argue for that is that when he pled guilty, actually, when he went through the proceeding of the aborted guilty plea, he gave truthful admissions as to the criminal conduct for which he was charged. He responded to the judge's questions, basically, how'd you get involved with these drugs? And he told them. It was a full and accurate account of his offense conduct. He talked about distributing drugs for his brother, who was the leader of the organization. He even talked about conduct that he committed in another jurisdiction in Florida about moving some kilograms of cocaine for one of the co-defendants, Pineda, in another jurisdiction. So according to the commentary, the application notes of the guidelines, my client gave significant evidence of acceptance of responsibility, which the linchpin of a guilty plea is whether or not you plead guilty and you admit to your offense conduct. And he did that. The second instance, or the second set of factors that I would submit, argue for my client being granted an acceptance of responsibility, are his individual factors in this case. He's a person of limited education. He had and has.
As you know, we do not impose sentence in criminal cases. Right? The decision is made by the district judge. Our review is for abuse of discretion. So the question you need to address is why the district judge abused his discretion, not your beliefs about how the district judge should have used his discretion.
We submit that the district court abuses discretion and that there's clear error in this case, because when the district court judge made his determination at sentencing and denied my client the reduction of sentence for acceptance of responsibility, he failed to take into account these individual factors. And he incorrectly weighed those factors and made a judgment, okay, that was inconsistent with the facts in this case, based upon my client's limited education, his inability to understand the English language, and the fact that he has some problems up in his head.
Or so he said. The district judge ultimately reached the conclusion that your client was a malingerer, that he was intentionally attempting to manipulate the criminal justice system. Now, that's a finding of fact. Why would that finding be clear error?
It would be clear error if the judge is wrong. And we are submitting that the trial judge was wrong.
The fact that you disagree with the judge doesn't show that it's clear error. You need to explain why that finding is clear error. Just stating it's wrong doesn't cut the mustard.
Well, by the judge's own statement at sentencing, when he said that I'm not going to give Mr. Diaz an increased sentence for obstruction of justice for his conduct, he said, I'm going to give the defendant the benefit of the doubt because there was something going on, and the only way I can interpret the statement that the judge made that's in the transcript at sentencing, that there was something going on in his head, I'm going to give Mr. Diaz the benefit of the doubt and not give him an increased sentence for obstruction of justice for the same conduct that the judge determined that he was going to hold against him for denying him acceptance of responsibility. I mean, I realize we're talking about two sides of the same coin, but in one hand, the district court judge is saying, okay, I'm going to give your client, Mr. Simon, the benefit of the doubt and not give him an increased sentence because of feigning a mental illness and all his disruptive behavior and sending him out for these examinations. But on the other hand, he held it against my client when he denied him the acceptance of responsibility and the sentence reduction.
Are those two positions mutually exclusive, counsel?
Not necessarily. I will concede that the application notes to the guidelines makes that very clear, that they're not always mutually exclusive. But in this case, and this case is all about the facts, as the court understands, in this case, the facts in the record show that the judge's determination that he's going to give my client the benefit of the doubt on that point, okay, should have carried over, and it was error for him to impose the or not to grant him the reduction of the sentence for acceptance.
Do not those comments by the court indicate a weighing by the court of those issues and making some determination which perhaps you and your client disagree with, but it certainly indicates, does it not, that the court considered those two elements amongst all the other elements under 3553 and made a determination?
I agree. I agree from the standpoint that the court, when we got to sentencing, it made the statements on the record that he was weighing those developments. He was weighing all those factors. Obviously, I'm arguing here, I'm in the position I have to show the court that there was clear error in this case, and I understand the burden is on the appellant to do that. But I would submit to the court that there was error in the ultimate determination by the judge that my client was feigning a mental illness from the standpoint that the record in this case shows, I don't know how other way to explain it, that my client, he had some mental problems in the case, and again, because of his limited education and because of his inability to communicate, he was just caught up in the process, and he acted the way he acted. I think the type of person that he was distrustful of everybody, including me, and I think that's apparent from the record in the case. Everybody in the case, other than that the defendant would come in contact with, whether it was the jail authorities, the people at Butner, his own lawyer, the judge, anybody that he saw in this case, he would be distrustful of them to the point of having this, over-the-top distrust. But he reacted when he went to Butner in that type of manner, not a conscious, willful decision to interrupt the process. It's just the way he was and the type of person he was.
Mr. Simon, are you suggesting then that the district judge committed error by finding lingering as part of this case?
Yes. Yes, I do. And the one aspect of that I would point out, again, factually point out, in the competency report that was submitted, and that's part of the government's part of the brief as part of their appendix. When Mr. Diaz was confronted by the people at the facility in Butner that, you're malingering, you're making this stuff up, how did my client react? Well, what he did, he reacted by assaulting another inmate, okay? He reacted by a crappy suicide attempt, okay? To me, and I would submit to the court, that is not an intentional and a willful and a conscious type of disruptive act, although it is disruptive, and there's no question about that, but when you talk about denying him acceptance of responsibility, my client acceptance of responsibility for his conduct has to be willful. He has to have a conscious objective in engaging in that conduct. And I would submit if you look at all the record in the case, the way that he responded or attempted to respond to questions in the court at both guilty plea proceedings and even at sentencing, he was consistently inconsistent with his responses. He would be unresponsive to all kinds of stuff. And the way that he reacted was such that he did not have that conscious objective of disrupting the proceedings. And I'll reserve My time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Berkman.
Good morning, Judge. May it please the Court, Your Honors. This case was pending for almost 2 years from the date of indictment until the date we actually went to trial in this matter. And during that 2 years, the defendant, Mr. Diaz-Guadarrama, didn't make any attempts to plead guilty, accept responsibility, show any remorse until the commencement of trial. On the first day of trial, he attempted a guilty plea, and I would agree with appellant's counsel that he was truthful in his statements about his involvement in the offense. But this type of 11th hour attempt to plea certainly provided the sentencing court with an abundant basis to deny him an acceptance of responsibility. Even when the defendant did plead guilty, he showed very little or really no remorse during his statements at the change of plea hearing. He merely stated that he was pleading guilty because he didn't want to get too much time and he was aware of what he had done. And this certainly doesn't reflect any remorse or any real acceptance of responsibility for what he did. And lastly, the defendant did feign a mental illness for almost 2 years, attempting to avoid prosecution and avoid conviction in the case. He fooled several doctors who evaluated him for short periods of time, but when he was sent to the BOP facility for a long-term evaluation, ultimately doctors were able to figure out that he was a malingerer, that he was doing this to avoid prosecution and in the hopes that he would just be, the case would be dismissed and he would be sent back to Mexico. Mr. Diaz-Guadarrama feigned that he couldn't understand English, that he didn't understand the proceedings. But as they evaluated him long-term at Butner, it came out that he did understand English, that he did understand the proceedings against him. And, in fact, ultimately at Butner, the defendant stated that I'm faking it. I'm just doing this to try to avoid being prosecuted. So the court had abundant evidence in front of it, reliable evidence to conclude that the defendant was a malingerer. But ultimately what the court, it's the defendant's burden to convince the court that he's entitled to acceptance of responsibility. As this court has stated before, the sentencing judge sits at a unique vantage point to make that determination of whether the defendant has accepted his responsibility for his conduct. And this court upholds that the sentencing judge's decision unless there's clear error. And furthermore, only if there's no foundation whatsoever is there clear error found. In this case, there was abundant foundation in the 11th hour nature of the plea, the long history of malingering, and the lack of remorse in his statements. So for those reasons, I would ask the court affirm the sentencing court's the decision in this case. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Anything further, Mr. Simon?
Briefly, Judge. I would submit that the timing of my client's plea is probably about the least important part of this case. It seems that in his situation, the only thing that my client could control about the proceedings was when the time he came into court where we were set for trial, he basically says, I want to plead guilty. And that's what we all tried to do on that first date in June, on June the 8th. And ultimately, court didn't accept his plea. I mean, if you look at that transcript, it's like, okay, he gives the whole... Thank you, Judge.
We appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case, Mr. Simon. The case is taken under advisement.